B2, number 20A.
All right. Then we come to absolute Christian Science. And you remember, in absolute Christian Science, we said the main thought is that it is principle expressing itself in ideas. And you remember that we said, when we want to know what is the office of the level of absolute Christian Science, it is always showing how principle expresses itself in ideas of principle. And therefore, we get here quite a different symbolization for these synonymous terms. And when one studies the textbook, one sees that Mrs. Eddy uses those three synonymous terms, life, truth, and love, which are the ideal of God, in various combinations. And you may have asked yourself, why does she vary them? Did she just vary them because she couldn't always do the same thing? And so, if she had a good moment, she put it one way, and another moment another way, or has it any meaning behind it? Now, studying those combinations, you can see that when she speaks of the world, it is always life, truth, and love. When she speaks of the Christ and the Christ power, it is always truth, life, and love. When she wants to speak about Christianity, then she just speaks about life and love. And then you know how often she speaks about truth and love, namely when it's in the tone of science. What does it mean? It must mean that which has been shown on the level of divine science as life, truth, and love. As divine science, life, truth, and love. When being expressed as idea, there must be a so-called process to express that idea. There must be a way how we can see how the principle of being expresses itself in ideas. And so the world shows it as life, truth, and love. Meaning. Meaning what? Always the first one is the main tone. It is life, truth, and love. It means that life is the creator which always brings forth new forms which are true, and that these new ideas which life brings forth and which are true are always already at the point of love or perfection. Can you see? You get here now a creative sense. Life, truth, and love. It's no more the one life. Now the one life says, how do I express the one life in infinite ways and means? And it shows, well, it does it by seeing that there is always one life expressing itself and says, I am the creator, and what I create are true facts, truth, and those true facts are already complete. They don't say, and they will fulfill itself. They are already fulfilled. That's why I put here brackets, in order to show that they are, so to say, a chord, three tones which you play at once, and not one after the other. It is not a sequence where life leads to truth, and truth leads to love, but it shows that the way life can express itself is by saying, I am the infinite creator, and truth says, and what he creates is truth, is true, is fact, is factual, that's truth, and that fact is already fulfilled. It's already the state of completion, of fulfillment, of perfection. So, the expression, see now you have an expression of that one life. That one life now gives the sense of expression as infinite ideas of life, and does it through saying what it expresses is always true, and already in a state of completeness. We will see this point here next week over and over when we go over the vertical together. What we do just now is just to give a survey, and next week we go over this chart day after day until we really see it in its beauty. But here you can see that it gives now a sense of action, you see, a sense of expression. Can you see on top of it, in Divine Science, one life, we said it was that restful sense. There is one life, just one life, you see. And now within that one life is that constant creative sense, which says within that one life is constantly something moving. What is the creative work? What is the work bringing forth constantly? And so here it explains that the motivating power says that life is constantly creating, 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 creating. But what it's creating is something which is already true. It's a fact. It's factual. And it's already at the point of completion and fulfillment, because the infinite one life does not need to fulfill something. It's already fulfilled. See, we will see that very clearly then in the days of creation. It's always the sense, and God said, let there be life, let there be creation. Then he made it. It was a fact. And afterwards said as well, and it's good. Fulfilled. We'll see the days of creation then in a completely new life when we look at it in this way. And then we will get terrific laws about it. I shouldn't go too fast. Yeah, let's come back. Now, this is the word. The word we have seen is the creative word. The word of life. But the moment we come to the Christ, and that we have seen the Christ is not the creative Christ, we have seen the Christ is has a translation sense, from principle to idea. You remember, the Christ translation has a sense how to translate principle to the point of ideas. So in Absolute Christian Science, it is symbolized through truth, life, and love, because it shows, it takes the one truth or the one Christ and says, how does that one Christ, when I want to show it how it translates itself constantly to the idea, how does it do it? So it takes that truth here as the big ideal and says, this ideal, this Christ truth, is constantly expressing itself in infinite individualized truths. Life is individualizing. So here truth becomes truths. Do I express myself clear enough in English with the little s? The big truth, capitalized, becomes through individualization in life, small truth. See? And so, we begin to see the Christ has really that absolute office of saying, I'm the one truth, and translate it and express it as infinite individualized truths. And does it do that just at random? Just because it wants to do it? No, it has a sense of love in it, because love here says it is adapted to the situation. Only when God gives me stones when I want to build a house, it is right. But if he gives me a bread when I want to build a house, it is not right. But if I am hungry and he gives me stones, it is not right. But if he gives me bread, it is right. Can you see? The translation can be bread or can be stones, according to the situation as I need it. And who does define on that what is needed? Love is that which meets every need. So here we feel that wonderful touch that in being there is something going on which says, there is a Christ. There is a Christ which expresses the whole ideal of God and expresses that ideal in infinitely diversified ideals. It is individualized as truths. And those truths are adapted, each one, to the situation. Love. Love is the infinite adaptation, or something like that, Mrs. Edith says, isn't it? See. Can you see the wonder that lies in these things? They had not been made up by Mrs. Eddy. She listened and listened and listened and listened until she could catch the tone of being, which said, I show you the mystery of the Christ. The mystery of the Christ is, we know the Christ as omniscience. The mystery of the Christ is that he knows. That truth knows all of its own truths, individualized life. All of its own truths it knows. And it knows exactly what is needed in every situation, which specific truth is needed in every situation. And therefore, he is a savior. Therefore, Christ is a savior. He wouldn't be a savior if he would send me $1 million when I am sick. He must send me health. See? And if I am very healthy and I am deep in debt, then it's no use that he says, I make you healthy. And I say, I'm already healthy. What I need is a sense of abundance. So he must send me a sense of abundance. See? Can you see the adaptation which is there? Well, what on earth, have you ever thought, you see, have you ever thought why God in a treatment, the truth heals just that which needs to be healed and not something else? Because of this very fact that in being, truth is life and love. This is the fact about it. That truth knows all its truths, and that truth, knowing all its truths, knows which truth belongs to the right situation. That's love. You know, I know for you it's an introduction, and I know how it was when I heard these things first or studied them first. They were words, they were abstract. But you know, after a year or two or three, you have dwelt on them. You feel the warmth of it, the tenderness of it, the grace of it. The grace of it to go and say, I go into the world happy and I go at night and sleep. It doesn't just matter if it's raining or sunshine or what's coming. This fact is going on. This fact is going on. I only have to know, consciously accept that the only fact that is going on is really that infinite truth, you see, is that infinite truth is just constantly aware of itself. Truth knows itself. So truth, conscious of itself, is constantly going on, doesn't ask if I know about it, if I think about it or not. It's going on and says, I manifest myself as infinite truth. I care about everything. And I bring that to you which you need. You see, in all this thing, in absolute Christian science, you are not thinking out things. You never think out things. You let accept what happens in being. Let there be. Let there be a firmament. Doesn't say, now make a light. Think about the light until there is light. Said, well, the light is, but let it be. Don't stand in the way. Put Mary out of the way. And then the light can shine through. Put ourselves out of the way. Put all our material conceptions out of the way. Then these things can happen within us. And so it's a matter of changing our whole standpoint of consciousness, you see, instead of looking up to God and instead of thinking about God, it is accepting the ever-operative sense of God. Here it is the Christ. Then we come to Christianity, and here you can see that the synonymous term truth does not appear here. It's only life and love. Now, from this moment on, I don't want to be too explicit because we'll do that next week in detail, so that this week I can bring in all the rest of the subject which I want to bring in. But you can see that Christianity we have said, is always the point of idea. Then we always say, the moment we come to Christianity, the focal point is idea, is man and the universe. Now, if the focal point is man, there is no synonymous term for man, because man is not the synonym for God. Therefore, the whole Christ that is working down to the point of individual adaptation is really showing itself forth as the ideal man in Christianity, and man has no synonymous term. So all what is left here is life and love, namely the father and the mother. So that it shows here that the whole creation, man and the universe, is always our father, mother, God. That the whole universe and man is constantly under the infinite flow, under the infinite maintenance of life, under the infinite creative process of life. Life constantly giving to man, giving to man, giving to man as the Father. Love constantly taking up that what the Father brings forth and keeping it safe, keeping it warm, embracing it, protecting it, so that you feel all what I have to demonstrate here as man is God. Can you see that? Because man has no synonymous term, it's just idea. But when we want to demonstrate man here, I'm not going to think about man. I'm going to accept the father and the mother. I'm going to accept that in being there is just that sense of father. The father that constantly provides and provides, constantly gives and gives, that constantly maintains and sustains and brings forth. Now it stops at the point of Christianity on the level of absolute Christian Science, and as we will see next week clearer and more in detail, this wonderful tone of how to handle man by not handling him, but seeing that God is father and mother, and therefore accepting the constant flow of the Father and accepting that love takes care of that flow. You know, then you know how to be parents to children. Not always to criticize the children, do everything about the children, but do something about our consciousness of God, of life and love. Then we come to the last one in science, in absolute Christian Science, truth and love. Here you see the synonymous term life is missing. And you always have to ask why. Not accept anything because it's just stated or said so, but it's very natural with why life doesn't appear here. Because life, as we have seen on this level, is the creative fact. See, the creative fact of life. Now, science has no creative fact. 2 times 2 has no creative fact in itself. It has never been created. There was never a mathematician, not even a God, who said, now from this moment on I create the fact that 2 and 2 are 4. They are. So there is no need for a creative impulse. And we begin to see now the being of absolute Christian Science, namely that it is just truth, which is love, or a facts, truth, which are absolutely right, which are absolutely fulfilled, which are at the point of perfection. You get here with truth and love always in the textbook that wonderful sense that you don't have to do anything to establish the truth about anything, but just to accept that the facts of being are, and that they are perfect, that they are at the point of fulfillment, of being fulfilled. Can you see why life doesn't appear there? In science, we have always being. The moment we come to science, you remember the tone was being, and you accept to yourself what is being. Being is the truth of the universe at the point of complete fulfillment. So this is absolute Christian science. All this, what I am telling here, is really in my booklets on the four levels, but I just wanted quickly to go through it. Then we come to Christian science, the level of Christian science, and the synonymous term which appear here are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love in the world order, what we have been doing 2 days ago. This lower level, which is the synonymous term, as you remember, we have already done and have explained what they mean, the word, and the Christ translation, as principle, life, truth, and love, soul, spirit, mind, and the Christianity sense of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love, and then in the science order, the candlestick. So I don't need to go over it, we have done that. At this juncture, I just want to show you again that when we come to Christian science, it is a question of the relationship between truth and error. And we have seen that the way we can handle error, or the way we can handle a human proposition, is that we have to set those three fundamental erroneous concepts aright, namely mortal mind, matter, and sense testimony. That's why mind, spirit, and soul are introduced here for the first time as the main accent. We didn't have mind, spirit, soul in the upper levels. Only when we come to the level of Christian science, these three terms, mind, spirit, soul, are so to say the most important one, just as the accent on the other levels are life, truth, and love. Because through mind, spirit, and soul, we can set error, and we can correct error. Here in the world, it comes and says that this enormous impulsion of the world of life just comes as one says, I am mind, I am the infinite one mind, and therefore says, let there be light. Therefore, the ignorance of mortal mind and human mind must disappear. Mind. Let there be spirit, and therefore it takes away the sense that being can be material, and gives a wonderful sense being is spiritual and of spiritual substance, of spiritual reality. Let there be soul, showing that only soul sense can identify rightly, and that there is no other universe which can be identified through the sense testimony. Once we have done that, we can no more conceive of a material universe. We can no more conceive of a wrong universe. And so, mind, spirit, soul here are the most important factors, which come, like in the days of creation, said, let there be light, and the darkness disappeared. Let there be development, and the stagnation disappeared. Let there be identity, and the false sense disappear, and so on. So we get here, in absolute Christian science, the remedy for concrete error. Yes, this is a long story, we have taken it, and we'll come back to it next week again. All I wanted to show is how the synonymous terms now are thought to say that, can you say the flesh to the bones? See, we have the skeleton through the classifications, and then it's filled up with the wonderful warmth of the synonymous term. Now, just to go over it again in another light, we can ask ourselves, what does that do to our practice? In which way does it define our way of Christian Science practice? Well, we have started on the top. And I've seen the level of science just shows us that principle is its own infinite mind, and we have gone through that phone where we began to see that principle is looking after itself in a perfect way. But then when we come to divine science, we begin to realize that where we have the fourfold unity, that this principle here shows the operation of such a treatment. We have here four, and I always look at them as those fundamental four factors which you have in any problem in practice. In practice, we have always to do with a practitioner. Second, the practitioner giving a treatment. Third, that treatment should do something to a patient. And fourth, that the result of that treatment should be health. So you have these four offices in every treatment. Can you see that? Whatever the problem is, if the problem is a business problem, or if it's a corporeal problem, if it's a nation, or if it's an individual, it's always a patient. There's always a practitioner. A practitioner giving a treatment, so-called. That treatment should do something to a patient, and the effect of it is that it brings out that which forever was, namely the perfection of being. So in a way, you see, in treatment, the world, Christ, Christianity and science are really divinely seen. The practitioner, the treatment, the patient and the healing. If we look at it this way, then this chart gives us an indication of how we deal with the problems. If our consciousness is and could be on the level of divine science, which is oneness, then we would see what? As a practitioner. We would see not I am a practitioner, not the lady I have called on the telephone is a practitioner, but life is a practitioner. The one life is the big practitioner. And therefore we would show that there is only one practitioner and no more 6,200 general practitioners, which by the way are now nearly 50% of what there was 25 years ago. 25 years ago the number of the practitioners in the journal were 11,200, and today after 25 years it is 6,200, 55%. That should give rise to some thought, not just a little. But here we see, there is one practitioner. We must accept that one practitioner, which is life, which is the one being, which is the only being that can give being, that can be being and can give being. That's the only practitioner there is. No human person can give life to a patient. It's the one life, one practitioner. The treatment that one life gives is one treatment. We are here always in the oneness. Therefore, there is only one treatment. Actually, the more we rise, the higher we could go, the more we couldn't anymore give individual treatments. We come sometimes at that point where we just feel, I like to sit back and see how the one life is saying, I am the only treatment. I am the truth of everything. I'm not one single truth, one specific truth. I'm the one truth. And so we feel, if we sit back and can let consciousness be still enough to be filled with the one life, but then we see, and in saying that one life, that's the truth about the whole universe. And so we have that collective treatment of oneness.